Track 8, and these are letters to the editor. There are three letters this week, starting with a letter from Mary Nock from Dawlish. Exciting new chapter for an historic building. After years of uncertainty, disappointment and decline, the former vicarage has finally been given a new lease of life following the granting of planning permission and listed building consent for its sensitive restoration. The carefully considered scheme will see this important historic building restored and brought back into beneficial use, securing the future of one of our community's most significant heritage assets while respecting its historic character and setting. For local residents, this decision represents far more than the approval of a planning application. It marks the culmination of years of determination to find a sustainable future for a building that has long been regarded as one of the town's most important assets. As chair of the Vicarage Residents Group, I'm incredibly proud to have played a part in helping to bring about this positive outcome. Believing that the building deserved another opportunity, I contacted the Crown's legal representatives, the previous owner and a local developer with a vision for a sympathetic and respectful scheme that would restore the listed building while making the project financially viable. Following those initial discussions, I arranged to meet the developer on site and a senior planning officer from Teignbridge District Council also attended. That meeting helped establish constructive dialogue between the council and the prospective purchaser, leading to further discussions involving Historic England and key council officers. The greatest credit now belongs to the new owner, whose vision, determination and willingness to invest in such challenging buildings have made this restoration possible. I would also like to thank Historic England's support and constructive involvement, along with the officers at Teignbridge District Council and local residents who supported the campaign. Their encouragement over the many years helped keep this remarkable building at the forefront of people's minds. The granting of permission is not the end of the story, it's the beginning of a new and exciting chapter.
Local democracy answerable to local voters. From Wendy Davis via email. Local councils are elected to serve their communities, dealing with issues such as housing, social care, roads, planning, and local services. They should be cautious about being drawn into international political disputes. The Palestine Solidarity Campaign has actively lobbied councils and councillors over investments and policies relating to Israel. It has also publicly identified councillors according to whether they support its agenda or not. People have every right to campaign and lobby elected representatives. That is part of democracy. But there is a legitimate question about whether sustained pressure from outside organisations risks diverting councils from their primary responsibility to local residents. There should also be transparency about the funding and activities of organisations seeking to exert political influences at local level. Residents have a right to know who is funding campaigns and how much influence they are having over decisions made by their elected representatives. This is not an argument against supporting the Palestinian cause, nor against legitimate political campaigning. It is an argument for keeping local government focused on local priorities and ensuring that decisions are made openly and in the interests of the whole community. Local democracy should be accountable to local voters, not driven by the agenda of outside campaign organisations.
John Farrand-Rogers, Teignbridge District Councillor for Moreton Hampstead, entitles his letter, Colouring In Without Going Over the Lines, and writes, they tell us that Andy Burnham was a remarkably successful mayor of Manchester. He may well have been, I have no idea. But Manchester could not have been much of a challenge for him. It's an urban area, well developed, with good internal communications, and it is also comparatively compact. In contrast, Labour came up with an alternative for us, which they started by calling Coast and Country, before they changed it to Devon, conveniently forgetting that Devon refers to a much wider area than that. This supposedly local authority is eminently rural and covers a much larger area than Manchester. It has no obvious centre, its original heart, Exeter, having been cut out. Its road network was centred on Exeter. Now it's hard to see how services are going to be organised. It has very little industrial base and no universities. What happened to education, training and development for the future? I think Starmer was much too close to Trump. He and Musk had the bright idea of hiring a gang of inexperienced adolescents to fire large numbers of professionals who were doing the actual work of running the country. The Americans, of course, are now suffering the consequences. I think Starmer must have brought in a group of children and instructed them to draw lines on a map and then colour it in. And local taxpayers are going to have to cop up in the region of £8 million for that. I wonder if one of our Devon MPs will put down a question in Parliament to ask Andy Burnham just how he would have set about running the new Devon Authority successfully. And that concludes the letters for this week.